All right. So I'm going to continue talking about these total differentials, which are really just differentials. They're not totally new. Okay, it's just another way of thinking about differentials when you have multiple inputs. I remember there was one homework question way back when where the way I set it up, there were two inputs, x and y, and if you tried to factor a dx out of the differential, you couldn't really do it because there were these dy terms. All right? But in a problem like that, you can do the next best thing. Factor out the differentials for each input variable. Okay. So, and here's a little exercise. Who remembers the quotient rule? Right? What is the differential of that?
Y dx minus x dy over y squared.
Very good. Now, let me break this up into two terms, a dx term and a dy term, like this. Okay? The total differential of x over y. Just break it up into the differentials for each input differential. In this case, we're thinking of x over y, the quotient as being the output, and the x and the y are the two inputs. Okay, so there's this, the differential for the input x, the differential for the input y. And this grouping, right, also tells you the partial derivatives. Okay, so I claim that this term right here is the partial derivative with respect to x of x over y. And I claim that this term here, the negative x over y squared, is the partial derivative of x over y with respect to y. And I can check that. If you want to check this, partial of quotient x, y, partial x. Remember what this means? It means the differential, right, like here, of x over y divided by the differential for x, right? So it's a derivative, but with y held constant, right? All the inputs except x are constant here. Now, it's easier to do this if you think of it as multiplication. Okay. So you think of it as x times the reciprocal of y. Y is constant. The reciprocal of y is therefore also a constant. So I can factor it out. Just the constant multiple rule right there. And then the dx's cancel, and you get y to the minus 1, which is the same as the y over y squared over there. So it works.
Okay.
There's your... This partial derivative here really is just the coefficient in front of the dx from taking the differential of the whole thing. And it makes sense, because if you think about it, what does it mean when y is constant in terms of dy, right? Expressing constancy of y is very easy, right? If y is a constant, you're just saying dy is zero.
Yeah.
Well, if dy is zero, this whole term here dies, right? And so you're just left with exactly this term, which is the 1 over y dx that we got right here. We could have, if we made dy equal to 0 right at the beginning, this term dies, and you just have y dx over y squared.
Okay.
So it's another way of looking at differentials, if you like. You could forget about all the constancy stuff and just compute the big differential from the beginning and then just group your terms and recover the partial derivatives.
Right.
Or you can go the other way, compute the partial derivatives, put them together into a big differential.
So that's where the two comes from? The
two.
The two, two...
I don't see a two.
No.
Two.
This one. There.
Here?
No,
this
one.
That's not a 2.
Oh.
that's the new weird symbol. It reads partial. It's not in any alphabet or number system that I know of. It's just its own thing. It's not a 2.
Partial.
Yeah.
Integration. Right. Just whatever the back of the scene.
Other questions or comments? Yes.
Is there a way to do the symbol?
Well, there are actually, for good or ill, there are actually several different ways that people have written partial derivatives. Okay? So, for example, you'll see people write this. Right? So let's say it's a function of two variables. Okay? You'll see people write this. But some people, they don't like all of these fractions, this is really not even a fraction, technically. It's kind of it's a fraction with an extra condition on it, right?
Mm-hmm.
Partial fractions means something else. You don't want to go there. So some people, they just put a subscript, right, to indicate the variable with respect to which they're computing the partial derivative. Some people, they think of it as, well, you know what, who cares about the letters in there? I could call them S and T. What matters is what F does to the inputs. And so they'll just write this to indicate I'm taking the partial derivative with respect to the first variable. Mm-hmm. And some people might do something like this. They're thinking of an operator. Some people might write that operator like this. People have thought of a lot of different ways to try and make it less writing intensive. So for example, I need to control this. So I will use these two. Okay. Sometimes you do really want to save space, and so you'll see this notation This is going to come up next week, actually, when I talk about multivariable optimization. This notation is really makes things easier to read. So I'm gonna prefer these. Not that the other ones are bad, but I need to pick something. And at least my experience, those first two are the more popular ones, for whatever that's worth. So if I use that notation, I could write, like the second notation there, the more abbreviated one, like this, I could just write, you know, the 1 over y like I have up there. And if I put a little subscript y, then now I mean the y partial derivative, which is the negative x over y squared up there.
Just be careful with the subscripts, because if you write your subscript a little too high, then it looks like you're multiplying by x or y.
Other questions?
I wrote that on the backboard. I'm probably regretting that now. Now I want to bring a board in front of it.
Of x over y, okay, on the first line.
Mm-hmm. It's okay. Just a grouping of the differential. Here, I'm going to put the alternative notation here, okay?
That's in respect if x were a constant.
No, this is just the regular differential. Uh-huh. I'm just grouping it. I group it into dx terms and dy terms.
Okay.
It's just like how I usually told you computing differentials before, factor out the dx. It's just a preferred way of writing it.
When we did just a single variable input, you could always factor out a dx. And that, so it was a useful simplification to do, because you knew for sure you could always do it.
With multiple inputs, you can't quite do that, but you can do the next best thing.
Okay. Now,
okay, so. So I put the little alternative notation up there if you like it better that way. And now I want to remind you of something. Think back to tangent lines, okay? Because I want to talk about their higher dimensional generalization today, tangent planes and tangent hyperplanes. Okay? So. These things also get studied in terms of linear. They also get called linear approximations. They get that name sometimes too, right? Because it's a line, right? So we have this kind of a situation. You have one input, and then you have your output, and the graph is curvy in general.
And then you have some, I guess, think of it as base input or base point or old input. I'll call it x sub 0, say. And then there's the corresponding output. And you get that just by plugging into the function. So I'll call it y0. And so on the one hand you have the curve, then on the other hand you can have a point like this. Let's think of it as a base point from which you can approximate the curve as a line near the base point. So if I have, say, some little change dx here in the input, the true change would be the delta y there. The true vertical change, we can approximate it, and if you're really close, it's a really good approximation. If you get a big dx, then it's not so great an approximation anymore. Using dy. Right? And here we're just computing the differential of f. Right? We're computing it at x equals x naught, right? There's a whole formula then for the tangent line. You have y equals y naught plus dy. And one way to write this is in terms of slope, right? So remember, df is, people like to write it as f prime times dx sometimes. Or maybe you like to write it as y prime. Y is f of x, so same thing. Okay, so if you like writing it that way, you would write something like this. If you put it in terms of f, you write this. I like to just write it this way. But there's one missing ingredient here. What is the dx? Well, the dx is the just how far have you gone from the base point. So it's just x minus x naught. Okay. So the idea is we're thinking about a point not on the curve now, but on the tangent line. Okay. So this formula is telling me the y coordinate on the tangent line. Okay. It's not telling me, if you want the y coordinate on the curve, you should just plug into the function, right? So, simple example, the squaring function, and let's say x naught is 1.5. So then the tangent line approximation of y, right? So not the curve exactly, but for point's close to our point on the curve, the tangent line is at least close to the curve. Okay, so we're going to have y naught plus the dy. Well, what is that? Okay, y naught is just plug in x naught and square it. So, because that's what I said the curve would be, the squaring curve. Okay, 1.5 squared plus, now I need a differential. So, let's see here. Now the thing is, I'm computing the differential at my base point x naught. So this is going to be 2 times 1.5. And then this dx is just a change from my base point to some other point. So up here, I'm going to get 2 times 1.5, so 3 times x minus x naught. Well, actually, I know what x naught is. It's 1.5. So if you want, you could group all this together if you want to simplify, but that's not necessary. If you do, it would look like this. Y equals 3x plus 2.25 minus 4.5. So that's the tangent line. This, what you see is a as I've indicated there, right? Here's the curve y equals x squared, 2, 1.5, 1 equals y. Here is 1.5 equals x, which leads to a y value of 2.25. That's 1.5 squared. The tangent line is going through this way. Questions about this?
What are you trying to find out when you're subtracting x minus x?
That's my dx. That's the change in x. Yeah. When we graph things, we usually graph the input on the horizontal axis. So your change in input is a horizontal displacement. And then the dy is approximating the corresponding output change. So that means since we graph the output variable on the vertical axis usually, that means we're going to visualize this dy as an approximate vertical displacement, right? In this case, we're underestimating how far up we need to go to stay on the curve. But as you can see, when dx is small, the error will be really small. Yeah.
Okay. Other questions or comments?
So you can apply this idea to things where there are more than one input, okay? So let's see, covering to something. Okay.
Okay.
For two inputs, now instead of a tangent line, we have a tangent plane approximation. It's also called linear approximation still, for a generalized notion of what linear means to higher dimensions. So.
Geometrically, it looks like a plane. Think of linear as meaning flat. All right. Okay, so how do we get that? Okay, so I have an example. Okay, so I'm thinking of,
so we have now, so think of z as the output, so, and then a function that has two inputs now. Okay, so how about this one? Kind of similar to the
parabola we had before.
Now there's going to be a base input point, but it has two coordinates, right? So two base input numbers, okay? So let's say we look at 0.1 and 0.6, okay? Now I want to have the tangent plane, okay? So this is a curved surface right here. But then I want to have the tangent plane at this point on the curved surface. So one thing I should do is I should plug in and compute the base z value. Plane there. So you're going to have dx is x minus the base value, dy is y minus the base value. So now we're thinking of these x's and y's are not necessarily on the curve anymore. Now they're x's and y's on the tangent plane, right? Because we're going to just have an approximate change in z now. So take the differential of this thing. Just like that. And what do you get there? Well, you can simplify a little bit. So we have negative
Okay, I guess one thing we have to clear though is we're plugging in, we're going to plug in the base points here. Just like I got this 3 here. It came from what? It came from the 2x slope table. I had a 2x slope here. I plugged in 1.5. So likewise here, after I get this formula for dz, I'm going to plug in my numbers, my base values for x and y right here. So I'm going to have negative 2 times what? Times a 0.1, then times a dx. So x minus 0.1. And then I'm going to have 0.6 times y minus 0.6. And as you can see, I factored out the negative 2.
So that's the higher dimensional generalization. And I have a visualization of this, actually. Okay. So you might want to ask, what does this look like? Okay, I've got my curved surface. Right? And now here I've got this thing that I claimed is a flat surface, a plane. So the way you graph it is something like this. You kind of have to take a projection of 3D space. So you kind of think of, there's my x-axis going out this way, here's my y-axis going out this way, my z-axis is going up that way, and try and imagine what it would look like if you took a picture of that. Okay. A little harder to graph by hand. I'm not going to ask you to do that.
quick question.
Yeah.
How is it that on the differential of the z,
yeah,
that in the functions inside are going to be x minus 0.1 and y minus 0.6.
No. Oh, that's because I picked
these as the base points.
Uh-huh.
And then these would be the changes from the base points. As you leave the base point, right, this is how your x and y will change.
Right.
So we're thinking of the x and y as inputs now. So we take it at, that we can figure out exactly what the change in x and y are, because we're going to plug in whatever x and y we want. Okay. And the approximation is happening here. Right? This is only approximately equal to the true change in height along the curve. Right? And the approximation is only good for small dx and dy. Right?
So what happens? Like compared to the first one where we just change the x,
mm-hmm,
what happens when we change the x and the y? What happens to the graph? What differs?
Okay, so you saw the graph there for the tangent line. So let me show you my visualization. Okay. You can make 3D graphs by hand, but it's tedious. It's usually better to ask a computer to do it. Depending on your calculator, though, you may be able to do 3D graphing on your calculator. The calculators I recommended in the syllabus can do 3D graphing. You just put in the right mode. Okay, so, all right. Don't worry about all the code I wrote. Here it is. Okay, the curved surface is blue. The tangent plane is red. Right. There it is. Here's a zoom in closer to the base point. You can see that the approximation is really good close to the base point. Okay. Yeah. Okay. It's the same phenomenon as from space, the Earth looks like a ball, but up close, the Earth looks flat. Yeah. It's the same thing. So that's the kind of thing you get if you want to actually visualize it. Okay. Well, you don't have to stop at two-dimensional inputs, right? You can have three-dimensional inputs. We did that last time with the volume of a box. There were three inputs, length, width, and height, and the output was volume. So you can take differentials just like with that. It's just that now it's going to be even harder to visualize it, right? I can't give you even a computer visualization. And so we just have words for these things. So we'll say things like hyperplane, okay? Example, going back to that volume one. Okay. Let's say we have base points like last time. I think this is how I chose them last time. So now there's three input variables. Then, if you tried to imagine this, this would be some kind of a curved hypersurface, whatever that means, right? It's something in four-dimensional space, right? Right, just like that upside-down bowl or hill that I showed you on the computer screen, right? That was a two-dimensional surface in three-dimensional space. Whatever this is, I guess we would call it a curved three-dimensional thing in four-dimensional space. So, can't really tell you what it would look like. I suppose I could tell you what two-dimensional slices look like. That's the best I could do. Or some weird shadow operation. Anyways, we can still do the same pattern as what we did here. Okay. So, we can have our input differentials, which will be measures of exact changes in input. Okay. And then we need the volume differential. We got that last time. It would be this. And what I want is, I want to evaluate this at the base point. One way you can get this is, using the relative change formula, which is nice looking, right? That's how we got it last time. Or you could look at the partial derivatives, right? So you'd have, I guess to save space, right? Or I could have written it like this, a partial V, partial L, DL, plus the other partials times the other differentials. Right. However you get it,
It's going to look like this.
Okay. And so I'm going to get a formula that should remind you of the stuff we did last time. Okay, so like the W times H will be the 20 that we had last time. Okay. And the DL will be that L minus 3. And then here I have L times H is 15. Then DW is W minus 4. LW is 12. DH is H minus 5. So there's three inputs that can change, and those will be exact. And then this formula represents an estimate of the actual change in the volume, should you change the length, width, and height. We need a plus sign there. Okay.
So, let's see. Something is not complete.
Right here, I need one more thing, right? In my tangent plane one is missing. Okay, I think I just bring this down. Okay, so this is, I got the DZ, but I need one more thing, which is Z equals, right, Z naught plus DZ, right? This is the tangent plane. So all this stuff. So the Z naught is the 1.63 minus all that. That would be the actual tangent plane formula. I'll write it. I'll put the Z again here for emphasis. Okay. So it's you're approximating the Z on the curve by the Z on the plane. So you're taking the base Z value plus our estimated change in Z. And likewise here, you're going to take your base output, which would be 3 times 4 times 5, which is 60. Okay. Differential. So there's your formula for this higher dimensional one. And all we're really doing is stuff we've done before. And just being in terms of given, you know, such and such a situation, like given a box, you know, I increase, you know, the length by a centimeter, I decrease the width by 4 centimeters, I increase the height by 2 centimeters, stuff like that. And I have some starting some starting places, like I start from a length of, you know, 3 and a width of 4 and a height of 5 or something like that. You know, what is the approximate change in the volume?
We did those kind of problems before. And this is
another way of thinking about it with a little bit more of a geometrical emphasis to it. Let's see. The point here is to have formulas for these approximating lines or planes or hyperplanes. Because if you have formulas, then you can feed them into a computer and the computer can do stuff with them. So for example, maybe you wanted to analyze how good these approximations were. For example, if I want to have a table for this kind of thing, how would I do it? I would need to have some values for DL, DW, DH, maybe in columns, and there'd be a bunch of small numbers that I could try in here in various different combinations. Right? So for example, maybe I start with 0.01. Negative 0.01 and 0.02, whatever. Then what would be my values for L, W, and H, right? Well, let's see, we'd have... So if I change L by 0.01, then I've got L must be changed up to 3.01. If W is going down by 0.01, then it's going down from 4 to 3.99. If H is going up by 0.2, then it's going up to 5.02 from 5. So right here, maybe I enter these manually, but right here I could just use a formula, right? And so then I could do this one, I could do all of these rows manually perhaps, or these columns manually, but then these, it would just be formulas, and I'd just copy-paste. so I could teach the computer. And of course, and now we want the exact V, right? So, well, obviously I'm just going to use the exact value. So in this case, 3.01 times 3.99 times 5.02. Okay. Then you want your approximate V. Okay. Well, then I'd have to use my formula over here, right? And I could plug the formula into a computer. And then the computer could do this not just once for these particular numbers, but for any other numbers I want to try. So I could get a big table, lots of values. And in this case, I've already got the DL, DW, DH in columns, so I just have this. Yeah. So in this example, it would be 60 plus 20 times a 0.01. So that would be 60 plus 0.2 plus a, or rather minus a 0.15. And then plus 12 times 0.02, so plus a 0.24. And you get 60.29. Okay, not bad. So that's the value of having things like these formulas, is you can do the analysis more systematically. And the repetitive parts the computer can do for you. So, let's see here. Let's get Excel going. I can do exactly this. So I can try lots of numbers. 0.01, about 0.001. I can just make up lots of numbers if I was like, please. Here's some numbers to try. Let me make some copies of this. Four copies of those, and maybe what do I have here? The negative 0.01. So I'm gonna use that here. For example, and then maybe here I'll do negative 0.001, and then here I'll do positive 0.001. And then here I'll do 0.01. And maybe I want to try a whole bunch of different z values, right? I've got my 0.02 there. So I could use all these different I could use all these different DL and DW combinations. Let's see. And I could try them all with, say, this particular dh. And I can keep going. I can make a copy of this whole thing. But now let me change the dhs to something different. How about 0.1? So I could have lots of data here. And then I could make a copy of this batch. And now maybe I'll try it with negative 0.01. And maybe I'll do one more copy of the chunk. Now I'll try it with negative 0.02. Right? So there. So that's actually the most tedious part, is, you know, that part there. And now the rest is going to be easy. I'm only going to have to do one row. Okay. And then I'll just copy paste to all the other rows. Not counting this top row, which is just labels. Okay? So this one was just 3 plus the DL over there. This one is 4 plus the DW. And this height H is 5, the base height plus the change. There we go. Okay? And then here I just multiply L times W times H. I can make that wider. See, that's the same number I got on my calculator. And then here we need the approximate V. So now I have to type in a slightly more complicated formula. 60 plus 20 times DL plus 15 times dW plus 12 times dH. Okay, I forgot the times. So. There we go. There's the 60.29. And now I just copy this row, and then I can paste it. And now I get all the other values for free, right? And I could, if I'm really curious, I could do something like an error, right? I could take, you know, the approximate, say, minus the exact value. And so if I do it that way, positive numbers for error are overestimates. And negative numbers in the error column are underestimates, and see all my little tiny errors. So. So let me save this. I will post the spreadsheet to the website as usual, and as always, you can always just click on a cell and you'll see the formulas right up there, right, if you open these things in Excel or your other favorite spreadsheet editor, whatever it is, right? Okay. Anyhow, there's if you don't have a Microsoft Office license, you can, you know, use a free one like LibreOffice.
All the computers on campus seem to have Excel.
That yet. I got to take a picture.
transition as whole.
So cool. Like, I always think it makes sense. I don't know what it's in this space.
Okay.
Let's do another little thing.
Here's something from economics, okay? Who has heard of a Cobb-Douglas function? Anybody seen those in economics, maybe? Okay, maybe I've taken that yet, all right? So it looks like this. Okay, they're used in a number of ways. One way they're covered is in production functions. They're also used sometimes for utility functions. So think of like a whole country, and think of all the stuff it produces, and you imagine some kind of common scale on which to measure it, like maybe the dollar value of all the stuff it produces. And it has and the idea is that in a very simple model, the output of the country's economy depends on two things. It depends on capital, which means things like all the equipment you have, for example, your infrastructure. It includes human capital like education. And then the one thing that it doesn't include is actual labor, you know, measured in man hours, say. And there's a formula for this of the following form. You have a constant, I'll just call it A, and then you have K to some power, alpha, and then L to some power 1 minus alpha. A is a positive constant, and alpha is a constant that is between 0 and 1. The thinking behind the funny alpha power and 1 minus alpha power is that if you could somehow clone a whole country, the roads, the people, so the government, the equipment, everything, and have, say, two copies of the same country, they would produce twice as much, right? And so this thing has that property, right? That if you rescale it, right? Like you have, say, C copies of your economy, then they would produce C copies of the production of one. So that's the intuition. If you could somehow duplicate it, you would expect twice as much production. That's because if you factor out if you plug in a C times K in here, you get a factor of C to the alpha. You plug in a CL here, you get a factor of C to the 1 minus alpha. And you multiply them together, and you just get C to the 1. That's the rationale for this kind of thing. It's basically the simplest, interesting function of capital and labor that is, as they say, scale-free. Right? Or scale-invariant. In slightly more verbose economist speak, constant returns to scale. If you just double everything, you get double the output. Okay. And so you can ask questions about this kind of thing. So for example, let's say I'm going to keep the units real simple. Let's just make A1. Okay? And let's say alpha is 0.3. Okay? And let's say we start from some base capital value of 5. I'm keeping the numbers small so you can pretend that the units are really big, all right? And L is 7 as a base value. Then you can ask a question like this. Which increases production more? Increasing K by, say, 0.01, or increasing L by 0.001, for example. You can ask questions like that. Okay. And then you could also ask questions like, what is the approximate production if K and L both increase by 0.1. Right? And these total differentials, partial derivatives are perfect for these kind of questions. Let's see if we can solve one of those. Okay. So let's say we were just increasing K by 0.01. Okay? So here we go. We're going to have the partials. And put them together with the input differentials like this to get your total differential. And I'm particularly interested in, say, for the first question, I'm not changing L, I'm just changing the capital. Right? Just adding more capital, more equipment, technology, etc. More education. All right, let's see. So I need to do some computations here. A little partial derivative. Okay, so holding L constant. Okay. What do you get? Okay, so you're going to take the differential of this thing. So you're going to have the A. You're going to have the L term as constant multiples. And then I need the differential of this one. Okay. So that will be alpha times k to the 1 minus alpha and dk. Right. And, but then, of course, I'm dividing by dk here. And similarly, partial y, partial l will be a times k to the alpha. Those get, those are constant factors now, because now I'm going to hold k constant to get the other partial derivative. And then now I actually take a differential here, and I get 1 minus alpha times l to the, let's see here. It's not k to the 1 minus alpha. It's k to the alpha minus 1. Right? Because you're using the power rule. I'm using the power rule here as well. And subtract 1 from this and just get negative alpha. Okay, so you can compute these things now. So for example, what happens if we just increase capital by 0.1? Okay. What happens? We would have, okay, this partial derivative times dk, but then the dl is 0, so this term won't matter. Okay. So this thing here, 1 times, that's the a, and then 7 to the 1 minus 0.3, so 0.7, 1 minus alpha power. Then I have a 0.3 times a k, which is a 5.
Is that a 0.7?
Yeah, that's a 0.7.
0.7.
Yeah, and to a negative 0.7. All times a 0.1 for the dk. And you can simplify this a little bit. You can, so it becomes 7/5 to the 0.7 times 0.3 times 0.1. And the other one, get a similar formula. You get the 1, then you have a 5 times a 0.3 from here, and then you get a 0.7 here, and then you get the L7 to the negative 0.3 here, and then there's a DL term, so that's the 0.1. And this simplifies a little bit. To 5/7 to the 0.3 times 0.3 times 0.1. So really the question of which is which is going to increase production more boils down to comparing which is bigger, the 0.7th power of 7/5 or the 0.3 power of 5/7. I don't know. I'll find out. Next.
So it turns out that this one is slightly bigger. Well, I mean, it's, I don't know if I should say slightly. It's about, this one's about a third bigger. So, like, the answer to the first question is that for these particular parameters, production would increase more by giving the laborers more capital to work with than by giving the laborers, you know, or having the laborers, you know, either increase in number or increase their hours, at least given these particular parameters, right? Okay. Two-part thing. First, I want you to do a little tangent plane approximation. And then... use it to... make a table... comparing... approximate and exact values of y for, let's say, 20 different small pairs of your choice. Thank you for your patience.